Welcome along, everybody. Another edition of the Three Technique College Football Podcast at the intersection of the X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes. Welcome to the Saturday Night Live show, the recap for Week 11, along with Trey Reeves. I'm Mitch Mason. Trey, today has been just glorious. If you could sit in front of the TV like I was able to do, kick your feet up, eat some wings. There were storylines all the way through, and while maybe the evening slate didn't give us the competitive games we were hoping for, the morning and afternoon slate certainly did.
Yeah, absolutely. It started from the very beginning. Penn State and Michigan lived up to the billing. Good back and forth game there. You know, a couple other games around the country. LSU Florida was a fantastic back and forth game towards the end of the day too. Not necessarily one that's, you know, playoff implications this year, but very entertaining nonetheless, and maybe had some Heisman implications for Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, no doubt. Jaden Daniels put on an absolute clinic. We'll talk about him more in just a little bit as they boat race the Florida Gators. Of course, we've got to get into the Michigan drama. They beat Penn State today. Georgia throttles Ole Miss. I've got a really concerning stat for Lane Kiffin backers. And Washington starts 10-0. For the second time in program history, the last time, if you're a Washington fan, I think you'll remember it. It was a big day in program history, a big year in program history. So we've got all of that to get into and cover. Of course, before we get there, I have to let you know we're brought to you by the Transfer Portal College Football. Head on over to their website, their Twitter account as well. Some of the best coverage from an independent sports media outlet out there. We write a weekly column. Weekend headlines in review. That'll be going live tomorrow. And by homefieldapparel.com, their bomber jackets are flying off the shelves right now. You can get 15% off your entire first order with code 3TECHPOD. Supports the show and also supports our favorite apparel brand for college sports. But Trey, without further ado, the featured game heading into this week was Michigan at Penn State. And the questions surrounding this game were bountiful, right? What would happen with Jim Harbaugh? Would he be coaching on the sidelines? Would Michigan be able to dominate Penn State on the road? Could Penn State muster some offense? And I think we got definitive answers to each and every one of those questions. Jim Harbaugh was not able to coach. The Big Ten did suspend him for the rest of the regular season, three games in totality. Michigan, of course, applied for a temporary restraining order. That was not granted. The hearing will be next week. And in all likelihood, Jim Harbaugh will miss the next two games as well. But for the other two questions, could Michigan win this game? They hadn't played anybody, was the narrative going around. They took care of business. And even though it was a low-scoring game on the scoreboard, they dominated Penn State really from the word go. The Nittany Lions only mustered one true touchdown that meant anything today.
Yeah, and I mean, I really feel like I texted you guys this in our group text that we have going throughout the day. I feel like they lost that game on the first possession. When they drove all the way down the field and had to settle for three, that just felt so deflating. The offense was moving the ball. They had a really fun diamond formation that was working, the full house backfield with the pistol with the two back set next to Drew Aller. That was working. It was something that looked like Michigan wasn't very prepared for. And then Michigan's defense stands up tall, holds them to three. And for the rest of the game, Michigan pretty much controlled and, you know, asserted their will as they have all season long. Your notes here are correct, Mitch. Michigan didn't attempt a single pass in the entire second half. Like, that's just utter dominance when you can do that against an allegedly top 10 team. So Michigan is asserting their will. I think they fully deserve any credit they're going to get. I think they should move up in the college football playoff rankings this week. I know Ohio State had a good week beating up on a hapless Michigan State, but who's more dominant in this country than Michigan right now and has been all year?
Yeah, it's a great question to ask. I think Michigan is built to win a national championship this year. The defense is as solid as it's ever been, but most importantly, the offense is able to get points when they need to. And, you know, they've dominated lesser opponents, sure. Today you look at the scoreboard and go, okay, they scored 24. Like, what's so great about that? As you mentioned, they didn't have to throw the football today. J.J. McCarthy was very, very much in bus driver mode. And that's all that they needed to do against a Penn State team who boasts one of the best secondaries in the country. They also boast the second best rushing defense in the country. And Michigan certainly didn't overwhelm them, but Blake Corum did have a season high in rushing yards today, over 130 yards rushing, couple of scores. And, you know, it was just another day at the office. It was a show up with your hard hat, your lunch pail kind of day for the Wolverines. And they're able to knock off a Penn State team that I was really hopeful for coming into the season. I made them one of my playoff picks. I went out on a limb and said they'd win the Big Ten. And a couple of ingredients have been missing from this Penn State team that it held them back against Ohio State. It held them back against Michigan. And I want to run this by you because, to me, Penn State's defense has all the ingredients, all the playmakers of a championship contender. But without a doubt, it's the offense that's holding them back. And I think they're held back because of two simple observations. Number one, Mike Yurcich is not creative at all. The play calling, the first drives for this season for Penn State have been abysmal. The play calling, the creativity, it's just lacked from Yurcich. And I think if you go over to Penn State Twitter, you'll see much of the same. That's not a hot take. But the second ingredient is that Drew Aller is not confident enough to command a winning football team right now. I'm not saying he won't be. I'm not saying that he's not talented enough. I'm not doubting his ability. But if you looked at Drew Aller today at home against Michigan, he was playing scared. He had deer in the headlight syndrome. And whether it was trying to step up and run or throwing down the field, he wasn't stepping into any of his passes. He was scared to get hit in that game. And in a ball game against a conference rival, when you're on the thinnest of margins, that prevents you from ultimately winning a football game.
I think you're leaving out the big elephant in the room, and that's James Franklin. 4-16 now, I believe, against Ohio State and Michigan.
Not good.
I highlighted on the preview show this week that it was one of those wins, too, was in 2020 against Michigan when that was just a hapless Wolverines team that didn't really want to be out on the field, it looked like, in the middle of the pandemic. So, yeah, I mean, big game James is not living up to the hype in Penn State, and he, quite frankly, they're going to be third in the West, or the East, excuse me, until, you know, something drastically changes here. I think they're one of the programs that's really excited that the division scheduling format is going away. They're going to get out of having to play Michigan and Ohio State every year because it just isn't working for them. It's not, they can't get over that hump. We're too far into James Franklin's tenure to think that he's going to get over that hump eventually. And, you know, I hate it for a guy like Drew Aller because we've seen flashes from him. I think he can be great eventually, but right now, you're right, whether it's scheme or whether it's just confidence in him, he can't get it done on the field, and that's holding Penn State back.
I want to run another take by you, and I ran this by our friends over at the Transfer Portal CFB. We went back and forth in the group discussion over whether or not they thought this was a valid take. I think after explaining myself, I thought this did rattle out and even out to a valid take. Tell me I'm wrong for comparing James Franklin to Jimbo Fisher in that they're one in the same. Franklin just has the easier schedule. When I say that, in what ways do you see that being a true comparison?
I mean, Jimbo Fisher has a national championship on his resume. I don't think, unless I missed it, James Franklin doesn't have that as a head coach, but
in 2023, in 2023.
Right. And you know, I can't argue with that. Like, you put James Franklin, excuse me, in the SEC West, and I know that he was at Vanderbilt for a while and did fairly well, especially by Vanderbilt standards in the East. But you put James Franklin in the SEC West from 2018 to 2023, I think you're seeing really similar results, if not worse results, from a Penn State team. You know, I think the recruiting is a lower level. The game day execution seems similar. The offensive struggles, very, very similar. I say that ironically on a night that Jimbo Fisher put up 51 points with a third string quarterback.
Yeah, he did.
I know it was against Mississippi State. Peep the handle down here, the Jalen Henderson Stan account. But Listen, yeah, I think that's a valid comparison. There's a lot of hype behind James Franklin. He doesn't get the amount of national animosity that I feel like Jimbo Fisher does for some reason, but I think it's a fair comparison. It's a lot of talk. It's a lot of hype every single year and nothing to show for it at Penn State. Just beating up on a lot of really low-level programs. The Big Ten and the SEC, you know, if we want to get into that debate, the Big Ten has so many more just quote-unquote easy wins than the SEC does. There's not an Ole Miss in the Big Ten, right? There's not a Tennessee. I guess you could argue that Penn State is maybe the Tennessee of the Big Ten, but there's not a Florida, right? There's not a you know, LSU-caliber program in the Big Ten behind Alabama and Georgia where you'd say that's like the Ohio State and Michigan. There's just not. And, you know, the Big Ten apologists will say that, you know, they'll point to bowl records, they'll point to this and that. Like, peep the NFL draft stats, first of all. The talent is way down south. Week in and week out, you got to prepare. And James Franklin just hasn't shown that he can get a team up for a big game. So I think it's an apt comparison. I think that I'd give the edge to Jimbo Fisher, and that should scare the snot out of Penn State fans.
Yikes. Okay. That was something I wasn't expecting.
I want Jimbo Fisher fired from my alma mater, and I would give him, I would take him in a heartbeat over James Franklin right now. Like, if you're telling me A&M can have Jimbo Fisher or James Franklin next year, sign me up for year 7 of Jimbo Fisher.
Wow. Okay. I might need to put that out on our Twitter at 3TechPod. See if we can get some votes rolling in there. Who would you rather have for next year, James Franklin or Jimbo Fisher at your program? I think that's a fascinating thought experiment. So maybe next time I kick a topic to you, I'll put that out on our Twitter. If you're in our YouTube channel, if you're watching live with us, thank you so much for hanging out. Which coach would you rather have? James Franklin, Jimbo Fisher? Leave that in the comments for us. You can do so if you're watching the replay or over on the podcasting side as well. Like I said, right in at our social media page at 3TechPod on Instagram and Twitter. I think last thoughts here. I think that in the biggest area that I see those two as being comparable is just a failure to adjust in game. When the offense is lethargic, when the offense is lacking a spark, your quarterback is clearly not processing things according to how that game plan was set. There seems to be no plan B. It's ram your head into a wall until the clock hits triple zeros. And, you know, you might get a pity touchdown at the end like Penn State did. But like I said, Aller was a deer in the headlights. And there just seemed to be no adjustment, nothing to get him comfortable. And not all of that is on coaching. Aller was terrible today, to be quite honest. He just was. That fourth and seven play, the play that essentially lost them the ball game. He threw the ball into a different zip code than the route that his wide receiver was running. And even the commentators, I think Joel Klatt tried to say, yeah, he was hoping his wide receiver kind of adjusted on a hot route in the moment. But like, that was Aller knowing, hey, this isn't the route my wide receiver is running. I'm hoping with game on the line that he sees what I'm seeing and he's going to adjust. Like that's not going to win you ball games. And it bit Penn State. So, you know, Aller was not good, but the lack of adjustment, just the same old from Yursich and Franklin was what got that comparison going in my head. And then I think it was one of our former colleagues at the transfer portal CFB, Jake Slower, who actually made that comparison. I went, you know what, let's take that and run with it.
Well, in case in point, you know, that first drive, it was obviously scripted, as most first drives of games are, with, you know, something that Michigan wasn't ready for. But then the second they face adversity, right? Like the second that they face the adversity and have to settle for the field goal, it's right back to the same old stuff. And, you know, the lack of adjustments, the panicking in the game, going away from what was working, it's textbook James Franklin at this point. Like I said, we know what we're going to get. 10-2 season, great. You didn't show me anything. If you go 10-2 on Penn State's schedule, like maybe you beat a semi-good out-of-conference opponent. Okay, like West Virginia, awesome. Good for you. But 10-2 on Penn State's schedule is not impressive to me. And I think they're a living, walking argument against the expansion of the college football playoff, if I'm being quite honest. Because I don't want to see a 10-2 Penn State. It, like, if Penn State goes 10-2 this year and we hypothetically have a 12-team playoff, I don't want to see that team. Give me the 9-3 team that's coming on strong. I'd rather see Jaden Daniels and LSU than Penn State in a 12-team playoff this year.
Oh, that's certainly fair.
I'm coming hot tonight, man. It's week 11. Like, Garrett's not here. I got to get the hot takes in. Make up for Garrett's absence here.
You're making a friend with Danny Cannell with takes like that. Let's go down to the SEC. Trey, you've been president of the Derail the Lane Train fan account. And you get another moment in the sun here, because Lane Kiffin once again proves he cannot compete in the biggest games. Georgia absolutely throttles allegedly a top 10 Ole Miss team tonight, 52-17. The game was out of hand before half. They were talking early in the third quarter as Georgia once again drove into the red zone. Yeah, this is probably going to break Ole Miss's will, and we've still got almost half the football game left to play. It was bleak for the Rebs between the hedges. Trey, I'm going to read a stat to you that I think anyone who is a Lane Kiffin supporter is just going to have to go agnostic towards in order to continue to support him. Lane Kiffin is now 4-24 against ranked opponents in his head coaching career. That's not good.
Not great. Not great. And again, it's another coach who we know what we're going to get, right? Like, I don't think, I don't know exactly off the top of my head how many years Lane Kiffin has been a head coach when you think about Tennessee, USC, FAU, and now Ole Miss. But in all those years, he's shown us who he is, right? He can win. He can run a solid offense. He cannot run a complete team. And his teams fold when they face a lot of adversity like they did tonight. And obviously Georgia is just on a completely different talent level than Ole Miss. But Lane Kiffin has a clear ceiling to me. And it goes back to, I mean, I know he was a young coach, but I'm old enough to remember when he had a preseason number one ranked USC team with a NFL caliber quarterback, and he goes 7-6 as a head coach, right? So he is who he is. He can't win the big games. And, you know, Ole Miss is obviously handicapped. We talk about, you know, a tough schedule in the SEC West compared to if Lane Kiffin has Penn State scheduled, then maybe he's winning 10, 11 games a year. Maybe he sneaks up and gets Ohio State or Michigan. But I have my doubts because he just coaches completely differently in these big games. It's like he's coaching with one hand tied behind his back.
Yeah. It really is bizarre how Ole Miss, you know, they can frankly bludgeon lesser opponents, even against teams that are on their level. They can look like Lane Kiffin has all the aces up his sleeve. Like, he's the boy wonder. He's the genius. No one's going to outcoach him. And then as soon as they go and play a ranked opponent, and a highly ranked opponent, in a lot of cases in the SEC, we are universes apart from Ole Miss really being able to compete. Now, I hear you. Ole Miss obviously has a great tradition of upsetting the Alabamas of the world, getting LSU from time to time, beating a team from the East. I get all of that. But the point is, under Lane Kiffin, it's clear. Like, we're past the wait and see mark on Lane Kiffin's head coaching career. The fact of the matter is, he's really good at talking a big game on Twitter. He's really good at talking a big game from the press box.
Really good at talking a big game to a kid who's extremely vulnerable in his office, too.
Yeah, that was a tough clip. I think just to not to pile on him, I think he was right. Like,
100%. He was right to kick him off the team, but
yeah, the language that got used was
I'm gonna lean in on this for a second. I know I'm the resident Lane Kiffin hater on this show, but like, man, how little of a man do you have to be to use that kind of language on a player when you obviously know you're right? Like, take the high road as North Carolina just sealed a rivalry victory over Duke. Awesome scene there in Chapel Hill. But how little of a man do you have to be? Like, that just tells me everything I need to know about that guy's character, right? To use that kind of language, and then the voice crack just added to it, like, but you're done. You're done. You're out. You're out. Like, he sounds like a depressed middle school teacher, to be honest, that can't handle a classroom.
Yeah, not the greatest look for Lane this week. Georgia, talking about the winners, Georgia racked up over 600 yards of offense in this game. They did that for the second time this season. The last time they did this, they also put up 50-plus points against Kentucky. And as we mentioned, Lane Kiffin's record less than Sterling against ranked opponents. So, Trey, really the question for me now becomes, projecting forward, Georgia's got two games left. They're going to cakewalk more than likely through the rest of this regular season, unless Georgia Tech can kind of reverse course and get something done in the last week of the season. 12-0 Georgia. We know the SEC championship game. They're going to be taking on Alabama. We'll talk about them in just a minute. If Georgia goes 12-0, but then loses to a much improved Alabama team, in your mind, does Georgia make the college football playoff?
So much depends on, you know, elsewhere in the college football space. But, you know, if we have three undefeated teams remaining and we have an SEC champion Alabama, I think they get left out, right? Like if Florida State is still undefeated, if Washington's still undefeated, if Michigan or Ohio State remains undefeated, and then you got a 12-1 Alabama and a 12-1 Georgia, I feel like you got to take Alabama at that point. And Georgia's the fifth team out. And that's a clear case for why we're expanding the college football playoff, because Georgia should deserve to be in. But, you know, in a world where Oregon wins the Pac-12 with one loss, or a world where Florida State stubs their toe against Florida, or in the ACC championship game against Louisville, I think they probably still have a shot.
I agree. I think, yeah, I certainly agree. I think when it comes to the expansion case, the thought of leaving a Georgia Bulldog team out that, to me, has been the number one team for much of the season. They're right there with Michigan, 1-2. Take your pick. It doesn't really matter to me. They've both been impressive. But the thought of them losing to a much improved Alabama team, yes, a tied team that looked bad early on in the season, a tied team that barely beat South Florida, that lost to Texas, but it is clearly a different football team. And Jalen Milroe has gone from being benched to someone that guys are talking about being the front runner for the 2024 Heisman Trophy.
He might get a shot at 2023 and, the way that he's been playing. Like, yeah. I would not be shocked if he has a couple big games. Like, if he has a big game against Auburn, leads him to an upset win over Georgia, he might find his way to New York this year. Like, I don't think that's completely out of the question.
So, yeah, I agree. I think Georgia has to be in the playoff. If we're putting the top four teams in the country in, Georgia would need to be in. Whether or not that happens with an SEC championship loss, I guess we'll see. I think you're right. It all depends on what happens in front of them or behind them as it currently stands. But, yeah, you can't leave an undefeated Washington and Florida State out, but also you probably have to reward Alabama. What do you do with Texas if they run the table and win the Big 12 championship game? Like, it just gets so sticky at that point, without a doubt in my mind. All of those teams deserve chances to play for a national title. Speaking of one of those teams, let's move to Washington. Let's go out west. They start 10-0 for the second time in program history after they beat Utah 35-28. I did get my cover from the Utes. That was a brilliant football game that Utah played. Tough, rugged, physical. Bryson Barnes gave it his all. A blocked field goal at the end helped get Utah one last drive, one last chance at tying it up before Barnes ultimately threw an interception. But I mentioned it's the second time in program history that Washington has started 10-0. The last time they did that, you and I weren't even born yet, 1991, when Washington shared the AP National Championship with the Miami Hurricanes. So certainly good historical precedent for the Huskies. What impressed you the most tonight from, or I guess this afternoon, from Washington?
Well, Michael Penix was Michael Penix, right? And, you know, you quoted the Utah DC here in our Morgan Scaly in our show notes, that he said Penix would have to earn his Heisman tonight. 332 yards, three total touchdowns. But man, the Washington defense pitched a shutout in the second half, and that was really impressive to me. They've been much maligned. I know they gave up 42 last week to USC. A lot of teams are going to give up a lot of points to Caleb Williams, and I know that they've given up points in bunches at times, but this is a defense that has a lot of talent. And I think they're underrated statistically. I think that the stats don't tell the whole story on this very opportunistic defense. They got blitzed in the first half. Bryson Barnes put up 28 points on them in the first half, but shut them out in the second half, gave their team a chance to win. And that really, really impressed me. Maybe that's a turning point for this defense as they go down the stretch. But yeah, I Washington, to me, should be considered for the number four spot this week. I think that they've shown a lot. That's a very quality win against Utah. You don't want to play the Utes in November. And they handled their business nicely this week.
I was very impressed with how Washington responded in that second half. You watch the back and forth nature of that first half, and I went, oh boy, this is where it falls apart, right? This is where the Cinderella story ends. And instead, that's not what happened at all. Penix throws for over 330 yards, three total touchdowns. I was really impressed with the resolve from this Huskies team. And we talked about it in the preview show. This was a defense that came in 103rd in the country in total defense. They were not known for getting stops consistently. And so when you have a big first half, you're not exactly counting on the Huskies to make enough defensive adjustments to slow them down, or at least get to the point where you could think about a shutout, let alone actually do it. You know, this Washington team, they're not blowing folks out like they were early in the season, right? And obviously a lot of that was against lesser competition. They're going to have to win these 35-28 ball games in order to survive. But it got me thinking. Let's say Washington makes the playoff this year, right? They run the table. They beat Oregon twice. They're in. Does Washington have what it takes to win it all, or are they reminiscent of last year's Ohio State team that could score with the best of them, but really struggled to get a stop when it absolutely counted?
Yeah, I think, you know, in any given Saturday situation, they definitely can, you know, win a game on the field. They've got an electric quarterback wide receiver combo that can go a long, long way when you just need to win one and two games. But to me, the comparison might be more TCU last year. Like, I think they're running out of the gates. The defense is a little suspect, but they've got just a quarterback and a wide receiver that have a mind meld right now, like reminiscent of Max Duggan and Quentin Johnston last year. I think it's a more talented version of Max Duggan and Quentin Johnston, to be sure. But I think, you know, they could get a Michigan. They could, you know, just outpace Michigan, outpace a Ohio State maybe with Kyle McCord quarterback. But then maybe run into a buzzsaw in the national championship game, right? Like, I don't know that they get beat like we saw TCU get beat last year, but yeah, they remind me more of TCU in that sense, maybe more so than Ohio State.
I think they're too talented to me to have TCU be the first thought. I think their defense, listen, TCU got all the breaks last year, right? All the bounces went their way. They, in fact, today before the Texas game, they showed a graphic. Last year, TCU was 6-1 in one score ball games. This year, they, coming into the Texas game, were 0-3. They're now 0-4 after falling to the Longhorns. We'll talk about them a little bit more in just a minute as well. But yeah, Washington can do it more explosively through the air, I think, than TCU did. TCU was so balanced, right? They could hand it off. They could play bully ball. Washington has started to do that a little bit more with Dylan Johnson, but he's really only broken out the last weeks. Yeah, he's broken out the last couple of weeks, but no doubt Washington wants to throw it over the top. And so in that way, I think they remind me of C.J. Stroud throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr., right? Emeka Buka, stuff like that. I might even think, though, that Ohio State's defense was better than what Washington has had this season. Now, they've gotten it to work. They beat Oregon, right? They've come up with all the stops when they absolutely had to, but their inability to consistently get stops for the defense to control a game, I think, is what is reminding me of that Ohio State team, right? Where, listen, you know, TCU and Michigan was a shootout, but when TCU needed to stop the run, they could stop it, right? they had the scheme drawn up. I don't know if Washington has that schematic element that takes away one half of the ball game. Am I wrong there?
Well, you know, I don't know that they do, but, you know, back to your question of can they win a national championship? Ohio State was a missed field goal away from winning a national championship last year. I think that's fair to say when you look at TCU's performance in that national championship game. So, you know, with that in mind, even if they are a 2023 version of last year's Ohio State team, then, yeah, I think in any given Saturday scenario, if they can play their best game against Georgia or whoever they run into as the one seed, they can sneak into that championship game and then anything can happen.
Well, those are our top three, our featured games from this past week. Write in, let us know what you thought of our featured games. How impressed were you with the wins by Michigan, Georgia, and Washington? Which out of those three would you tab as your national championship favorite? Again, let us know at 3TechPod. If you're listening over on the podcast, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, or over on YouTube where we do these live shows every single Saturday night. You can join us in the chat, and we would love to talk ball with you over on Saturday nights. Let's move into the rest of the storylines, Trey. And I think, you know, there were a number of games, especially in this afternoon slate, that caught my attention, that had us glued to the TV. But I think we have to start with one of the games from the morning slate, and that's Alabama absolutely murdering Kentucky on Senior Day. You cash that ledger pick. Looking back at it, I obviously picked Alabama to win. I picked Alabama to cover, but even having the thought in my mind that Kentucky would have a pulse in this game, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of that take because, it did not happen. 49-21, Alabama destroys Kentucky. We mentioned they clinched the SEC West. They will head to Atlanta to take on Georgia. But the question that I have is, as you look at Jalen Milroe especially, the defense has been solid all year long, but the offense now starting to put things together. Bama's rounding into form, and yet no one's really talking about them. Yes or no, Alabama has what it takes right now to win a national championship this year?
100% yes. They're still one of the most talented rosters in the entire country. The defense has rounded into form nicely. They're causing problems for everybody that they face. And Jalen Milroe all of a sudden looks like a true top-tier quarterback in this league. He had six total touchdowns today. You don't luck your way into six total touchdowns. I don't care who you're playing against. So, yeah, they absolutely can win a national championship game. They're already locked into the SEC title game. They got a tough matchup against Auburn. That's going to be, you know, Auburn's plucky this year. It's the Iron Bowl. Anything can happen. But, you know, that you get by Auburn, they certainly are one of the few teams in this country that can match up with Georgia talent-wise. So anything can happen in that SEC championship game. If they get in, they're probably going to be the betting favorite. That's my prediction. Even if they're the four seed sneaking into the playoff after winning the SEC, they are going to be the betting favorite in Vegas to win the national title.
I don't hate that take at all. They were talking about that on the Georgia Ole Miss broadcast. They were looking ahead to that game because with Tennessee's loss, Georgia was automatically put into the SEC East crown. And so as Georgia is just whipping Ole Miss, the commentators are already looking forward to that matchup in Atlanta. And that's exactly what they said is, look, Ole Miss physically can't hold a candle to what Georgia's doing, but there is one team that probably can, and that's Alabama. And, you know, that's the matchup that we deserve this year in the SEC championship. LSU has screwed around. They've wasted a tremendous offensive season from Jaden Daniels. He got another just fantastic performance tonight against Florida. And yet that team still has three losses. They're not out of the woods for a fourth yet. You know, if Texas A&M can figure out their offense, that defense is as good as any in the country. That's going to be a bout to watch the last weekend of the regular season. But I'm with you on Alabama. They're clicking on all cylinders right now. Plus, they've got Nick Saban over on the sideline, and that is worth so much in today's college football. Missouri, they dunked on Tennessee in Columbia today, 36-7. To me, going into this game, I was watching two storylines. One, could Tennessee rise and truly claim the throne as second best in the East? Or were they going to be years behind what Volunteer fans want them to be in Missouri? Is actually the real program in the rise. We didn't get any, there's no question about who is second best behind Georgia in the SEC East right now. Missouri stamped that. They made that permanent for this season. And like I said, I stand by it. Tennessee is not just out of it this year. To me, that's a program-defining loss for the Volunteers. They lost to Florida in a physical battle. They got out-physicaled on the road. They get out-physicaled again by Missouri, and Eli Drinkwitz called it out. I mean, he said their defense just straight up kicked their tails for 60 straight minutes. How impressed are you with Missouri? How disappointed are you in Tennessee?
I am very, very impressed with Missouri. Like, I am very impressed with what they've done this year. They did this today. They embarrassed Tennessee with Luther Burden having a very pedestrian game. He's coming back from injury, so it's not on him. But, you know, today it was the Cody Schrader show. 200 yep. yards on the ground, 100 yards through the air, receiving. And, you know, they're just finding different ways to get it done. The defense has quietly been really, really solid all year. And, you know, we joked coming into the year that Eli Drinkwitz is always going to just luck his way into 6-6, but he's patiently built that program. He's stood the course. He's getting good talent. Missouri's a program on the rise, and especially now that they don't have to play Georgia every single year. I know that's going to cycle in some more West opponents, and that's going to make things more difficult for the Tigers, but they're a program to watch out for. There's a lot of talent right in their backyard. They can keep getting those guys in, keep getting the right system in place, and they're going to be a threat for years to come.
I'm very curious to see just how monstrous Missouri can become, because they're recruiting now at a top 20. I think they might be approaching top 15 level. You know, and we've seen other SEC programs do this. You and I have a very personal experience watching other SEC programs do this and climb the mountain and build a roster that looks like a Death Star and then underperform. To be honest, I can't really put my finger on it. What's changed with this Missouri program? But Cody Schrader is one of the best stories. Was a, you know, playing at a D2 school, got his chance, and now is balling out at Missouri. And after today, he's at least going into the evening slate of games. He was the leading rusher in the SEC, 200 yards on the ground, 100 yards receiving, as you mentioned. To me, now I look across the next 3, 4, 5 years, and it is not a matter of if, but when Missouri gets a trip to Atlanta. They've played the Georgia Bulldogs close for the last two seasons now, once at home, once on the road. Game Day was talking about it earlier today, how that was a quality win that Georgia racked up last week against Missouri. And the Bulldogs fans, you know, booed, but I think it was really a compliment to them, not a diss, yeah. Not a diss at all. Missouri is a darn good football team this season. And so to me, I think Missouri's going to return to Atlanta sooner rather than later. It just seems kind of like a statistical probability, because Tennessee's not doing it. Florida's not doing it. South Carolina's not doing it. Like, you don't have another real option, I don't think, in the SEC East. And I think Missouri's just fine with that.
So here's their SEC schedule next year. And we don't have to get too deep into this, but I think it proves the point really nicely. They do play at Alabama, but their other road games are at Mississippi State, at South Carolina, at Texas A&M. They host Arkansas, Auburn, Oklahoma, and Vandy.
Very workable. It's very workable. No doubt about it.
Might be the year. Like 2024 might be the prediction year there for the return trip to Atlanta.
2024, the year that the Aggies and the Tigers rematch in Atlanta. Is that what we're building towards here?
One of those teams has a good chance to make it.
That's right. Probably not the team that's in College Station.
A&M might be undefeated in the SEC, and Texas knocks them out on Thanksgiving weekend for going to Atlanta.
Trey, I'm trying to digest a big victory here tonight.
Jalen Henderson, man. What a performance tonight.
That's right. The third string quarterback that could. I don't think we're going to talk A&M at any point tonight, but Jalen Henderson has to be the starting quarterback for these last 2 weeks, right?
Yes, 100%. Like, he gives you the best chance to win against LSU. Max Johnson, I know the revenge narrative would be fun, but he's a statue, and he just holds onto the ball too long, and Jalen Henderson showed a lot, and, you know, they tailored the game plan to him, and it worked to perfection tonight.
Kind of a funky throwing motion. He kind of shot puts the ball, but gosh, man, if the pocket broke down, he said, okay, we're rolling out. We're running. Kept his eyes downfield. He looked alive tonight. And that was something we haven't seen from the A&M offense here.
It looked like they were having fun tonight for the first time in about 3 years.
Yeah, you saw Jahdae Walker and Anaya Smith doing the glide down the sideline. Yeah, they did look like they were having fun. So, to a nationally relevant team, let's go Florida State and Miami. And this, like a couple of games on our run sheet, Trey, I originally had penciled in, you know, Team X throttles Team Y or handles Team Y. And gosh darn it, if Miami didn't make it a game late, 27-20 was the final score. We have to shout out Emory Williams, the true freshman who made his second career start in a rivalry game on the road. He had Miami right there and going for it. I don't remember if it was a third and short or a fourth and short, but needed the pylon, stretched his arm out, got crushed, ends up leaving the game with some sort of gruesome arm injury. Certainly thoughts and prayers to the true freshman. Tyler Van Dyke comes in and immediately throws a pick on, you know, the drive that could have tied it up. I mean, it was just kind of same old story for the Canes. Just not good enough. Third year in a row for the Noles to beat Miami, and Jordan Travis becomes the first Florida State quarterback in history to beat Miami three times in his career. Wow. Here's another team in Florida State that is right there knocking on the door of, you know, college football playoff appearance. I think they're fourth right now in the rankings. Yeah, they are fourth in the rankings right now. To me, this is a year that kind of screams expand the playoff. And I know we're getting it, but boy, this would be a fun year to have that 12-team system set up.
Yeah, Andy Staples has done like a mock 12-team playoff every Monday on his show this week. And every time I listen to it, I'm just like, please, can we just bump this up a year? Because it would be fantastic, except for Penn State being included. I'll die on that hill. But Florida State, you know, we talked about, does Washington have what it takes? Florida State has the defense to win it all. They combined with an electric quarterback and a great wide receiving core, like, they are going to be a problem for whoever they face in the playoff if they make it that far. Yeah. More so, I think, than Washington. So, you know, if it's Florida State, Michigan, Florida State, Ohio State in the semifinal, like, sign me up for that, because I think Florida State can stop either of those teams. They can cause a lot of problems with their pass rush, and their weapons on the outside are going to be a big problem for both of those teams that are used to playing, you know, a slower brand of football up north.
Yeah, I think I've been impressed with the maturation of Florida State. I mean, you know, week one, a season does not make, and a lot of people love to overreact, and it's hard not to try and draw some sort of conclusion from what you see in week one, right? And what we saw in week one against LSU is, oh my gosh, I don't know if Florida State's going to play defense this year. Despite all the talent, all the returners, are they going to actually play defense? And of course, it's taken a little bit of time. I think they would have loved a sharper showing in week one. But for a lot of people, that narrative that, oh, Florida State can't stop anybody has continued all the way to week 11. And that is not the case. Is Miami the offensive juggernaut that we saw in week two? That was an ellipse, right? The exception to the rule. That was not a harbinger of things to come for this Miami team that struggled to find their quarterback this year. But still, yeah. Florida State in a rivalry game, it's easy to let things get away, and it's easy for narratives to flip when you think one way, and it so often is the other. In those heated games between bitter rivals, they were saying on the broadcast, there were something like 120 recruits in attendance at that game, watching Florida State in Miami. I mean, we've got an intense rivalry between those two programs that is alive and well, and hey, we've still got Florida State coming up as well. So fun times in the Sunshine State, but for Florida State's defense to hold the Canes to just 20, to bend but not break, ultimately force a game-winning turnover on that final drive, to me was really, really impressive.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, they're winning in multiple different ways. They've played a lot of close games this year, weathered the storm in a lot of situations, fallen behind times that they shouldn't, and they finished their ACC slate undefeated. Last time they did that was 2014 when they made the first ever college football playoff. So,
yeah.
You know, bright days ahead for Florida State. I think they'll, you know, cruise to – obviously they play North Alabama next week. That should be no problem for them, but – the Florida game, Florida's going to get up for that one, obviously. They'd love to play spoiler, but there's no reason Florida State should lose that game this year with what the defense that Florida's putting on the field. So, yeah, you know, that leaves Louisville in the ACC championship game with the results that played out tonight. And Louisville's looked great at times, but also struggled with Virginia this week. So
it did.
The path is right there. It's wide open. If they can get in, if they can weather the storm, win these next three, they're going to be a problem for whoever they draw in that semifinal game.
Feels good to be a holder of Knowles coin. Tell you what, I mean,
early investor.
Early.
Because when Mike Norvell lost Jordan Travis to Jackson State, Travis Hunter. Thank you. Different Travis. When he lost Travis Hunter to Jackson State in prime, like, your Knowles coin was at an all-time low. Like, there were Twitter spaces.
Oh, yeah.
Hire Norvell on the spot. Find anybody to take his place for the upcoming season.
Yeah.
That was less than 2 years ago, right? Like, that was less than eight. That was February 2022?
No, I think 2021, because Hunter's a sophomore now.
Yeah, so 22, 23. He would have signed in February 2020.
Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah.
So, like, that's less than 2 years ago. Everyone's wanting to fire him for losing a recruit. Look at where he's at now. He's embraced the transfer portal. He's won that way and really revitalized not just his career, but that whole program.
I think that might have been the catalyst that inspired me to buy Knowles coin, because I was a fan of the hire when he came over from Memphis. Everybody was out. So, you know, we put in a few shekels and we said it can't possibly go lower than it is right now. And then as wins started to accumulate, we started to buy more Knowles coins, still on the cheap, still pennies on the dollar. And by now, where we sit, November 11, 2023, in the year of our Lord, you know, I'm getting ready to open up a neighborhood, basically.
To the moon. Absolutely.
Yeah, we might be past the moon right now. We might be well on our way to Mars, you know, linking up with SpaceX if they make the playoff here. So impressed by the Noles, no doubt about it. Boy, Texas is making a habit of playing these Big 12 games close, aren't they? They survived TCU on the road 29-26. We talked about it. TCU has had Texas's number over the last several seasons, inexplicably. Have had their number. Tonight, Texas gets back on the winning trail. They win 29-26. But, Trey, this game was 26-6 with 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and the Longhorns fell asleep at the wheel once again. It was interesting listening to Craig Way call that game on the radio as I was driving home. There was some real panic in his voice. There was disappointment in his voice as the Longhorns were seemingly letting another Big 12 conference game in November slip away. Credit to the Texas offense, though. They started that final drive on their 15-yard line, and they were able to pick up a first down and a little bit of a duck from Quinn Ewers. But Adonai Mitchell makes a great catch. In the end, just win, baby, right? Slog through Saturday. Slog through a victory on the road. Maybe the most interesting note from this, Jonathan Brooks has to exit the game with an apparent ankle injury.
Yeah, that could end up being a big problem for the guy that's, you know, just made that offense go this year. Texas is going to lose one of their last two games, aren't they? I know I said that last week. I said that they might struggle with TCU, and here we are, but the difference this year is that they're finding a way to win these games. Texas in previous years would have already lost at least two more games than they already did. But they're not exactly playing. Kansas State is a great program, but, you know, letting Houston back in the game, letting TCU back in the game. I know those are in-state schools and that's their Super Bowl to beat Texas on the way out. But guys, like, can we not bury a way lesser caliber team than what you're putting on the field? Like, just put it away, and it's going to come back to bite them. Iowa State's looking really good right now in Provo. They have the defense to not let Texas to get out to a great start. That game's in Ames. And you got Texas Tech and whoever emerges in that number two spot. They've all but locked up a spot in the Big 12 championship game based on what's happened. But I don't know, man. Like this is really concerning. I think Alabama, like, that debate should be settled. Alabama deserves to jump them in the college football playoff rankings, right? That game was week two. That game was week two.
It was week two, but you have to respect to say that progress is linear, or that teams are, you know, the snapshot on a week to week basis is the reality. The rest of the time is a logical fallacy. Alabama is not the same team. Texas is not the same team, but you have to respect head to head. And both teams have one loss, and Alabama's loss is to Texas. Like, I know in a power ranking, yes, we put Alabama ahead of Texas, and we caught some flack for that. We got asked, do you not respect head-to-head? We absolutely do, but this isn't our college football playoff ranking. This is a power ranking. Who are the best 25 teams in college football? No doubt in my mind, Alabama is a better football team right now than Texas. But when this is a merit system as well, when you rank these teams in order of eye test, of statistics, Texas beating Alabama has to be a weighty factor in why the Longhorns are ranked over the Crimson Tide. To me, that wouldn't sit well, even if I believe Alabama's a better team. Alabama had a chance in week two to prove that they were a better team, and they lost that game. And until Texas loses another game, if all else is equal, I think the Longhorns have to be ranked above the Tide.
So here's my counterpoint. I'm going to give you the scenario, and you're going to tell me that you're going to rank the Longhorns over the Tide in this scenario. So Alabama wins out, beats Georgia, 12-1. Texas does the exact same thing they've done the last 3 weeks in a row now, and barely beats Iowa State, barely beats Texas Tech, like 3 points or less in those matchups, because that's what they've done the last 3 weeks in a row now.
Yeah.
And they barely beat, we'll say, Oklahoma State, a team that got whipped by UCF today. And I'll eat my crow for saying that they weren't going to fall a victim to let down look ahead. So if they win all those games by 3 points or less, Alabama destroys Auburn and beats Georgia by a touchdown. And they're the two teams up for the last four spots. We're in the scenario where we laid out earlier, where we got to decide one of those two for the last four spot. You're giving it to Texas because of a week two win?
No, not necessarily, because I think I said all else equal. So if Texas objectively looks worse down the stretch and Alabama is just cruising through folks, then to me, that's not all else is equal, right?
Yeah.
You have Alabama heavily outperforming Texas. And in a case where there are only four slots and somebody's going to be mad, then I think, yeah, you do have to take the Tide over Texas. The Tide's resume would be far superior to Texas's in that case,
right,
as well, right? So, you know, all else equal is kind of a vague, and maybe that sounds like a cop-out to someone who's going, wait a minute, are you talking out of both sides of your mouth? I don't think I am. But I'm saying, in as neutral of an environment, as level a playing field as I can get, I would still rank Texas ahead of Alabama. In that scenario that you played out, though, no. I think everybody and their mom should rank the Tide above Texas and give that final playoff spot to Alabama. Will that happen? Who knows, man? This playoff committee, they ranked Ohio State number one and talked about how great they were. And I think we were all scratching our heads on that. So yeah, that's kind of my muddled long-winded answer to that question.
Okay. I'm going to disagree. I think that they've done enough now to overcome that week two loss. I think they should be ranked ahead. I don't think they will be. I think they will hide behind, you know, the head-to-head matchup, but we're 2 months removed from that. I think we've seen enough to know that Alabama is the better team at this point in the season.
The problem to me is, and there's no right answer here, the problem is just like, what's the cutoff? Where's the right. Where's the intercept point, right? Like on the XY axis of this team is now definitively better than that team. Like where do you chart that?
It's the same debate people are having with Oregon and Washington, right? But Washington has a more, like, the reason I'm okay, Washington obviously had a big win today. We already talked about that, but Washington didn't look good in the 2 weeks following up. Nope. But they had a bigger body of work where they had looked better than Oregon and had the head-to-head win. So, like, that's why Washington was ranked ahead of Oregon in the college football playoff rankings. But, you know, more recent history, I don't know. Like, it's such an arbitrary line to draw. Yeah, if that game happens in October, are you ranking Texas ahead? Maybe, right? But this is why we're so happy that it's expanding to 12 teams, because we don't have to have this silly argument over number four when there's a lot of deserving teams.
Yeah, I just think we're always going to have this argument, but
fight about 12, right? Like, we will fight about number 12 next year.
Exactly. I would much rather fight about teams 11, 12, 13, and 14 than teams 3, 4, 5, and 6, because the reality is teams 4, 5, and 6 in today's college football probably can win a national championship just as easy as 1 and 2 can. If you don't believe that, then, you know, look at Michigan. Man, they're the most dominant team this year. A lot of people thought they were a dominant team last year. They crushed Ohio State, and TCU took them out in dramatic fashion in the college football playoff. I don't buy into the narrative that there are only two teams every year that can win a national championship game. Nowhere else in sports is that actually the case. Heck, we just got two wild card teams that made the World Series this year, right? I mean, does it have to be the sexiest World Series to validate a championship? Of course not. That argument that, oh, well, the World Series or the championship game wasn't the two best teams, wasn't the most entertaining thing, that doesn't invalidate the playoff format. And so for me, to say that a national championship should only be between two teams, that two teams should have a chance and nobody else, it just seems antiquated to me.
Yeah, and it takes out the growth over the course of the season. And that's what I think I'm really excited to see factored in with the new 12-team playoff.
Totally. All right, let's move through some of these other storylines a little bit more quickly. We've got LSU beating Florida 52-35. Jaden Daniels, Trey, did something that we had not seen in a decade in the league.
Yeah, throwing and running for 200 yards in the same game. That's the first time since Johnny Manziel in 2013 against Mississippi State, his last home game as an Aggie. The dude needs to go to New York. I don't care if they lose out. If they somehow lose to Georgia State and A&M and go 7-5, like, still send that guy to New York. He deserves it. Where would LSU be without him right now? Like, I think they'd be struggling to make a bowl game.
Yeah, they might. They really might. I mean, 7-5 would probably be realistic. Do you know, by the way, who the quarterback was from Mississippi State back in 2013?
I believe it was Rain Dakota Prescott.
It was. Was that
a freshman, I believe.
As a true freshman, I was going to say, I think that was his first visit to Kyle Field. So, very cool day for Jaden Daniels. He's awesome. Their defense stinks. Giving up 35 to Florida is a black eye for sure. And I do think, I still stand on my preseason prediction. I think there's a chance A&M goes to Baton Rouge and beats LSU. If the defense can find a way to corral Jaden Daniels like they did last season, the Aggies can win that game. And I think Brian Kelly would have some real awkward conversations if that happens 2 years in a row. Speaking of awkward conversations, Trey, I made a prediction that Oklahoma State would not struggle in the bounce house at all. You talked about how, this is kind of a letdown situation, but there's nothing to look ahead to. So I think they're going to be fine. 45-3, UCF wins in their space game. Ollie Gordon leaves with an injury. Alan Bowman throws three interceptions. Like, everything went wrong for Oklahoma State. They were being shut out at the half. It was 24-0.
Yeah. Ollie Gordon goes down with an injury, and this is the downside to when you have one player be a revelation for your team, right? Like, Ollie Gordon was the catalyst for this resurgence for the Cowboys. When he goes down, you don't know what to do. So they tried to lean on Alan Bowman. He threw three picks, and this game snowballed away from them very, very quickly and just got completely out of control.
Yeah. Second place now in the Big 12 is wide open. We've got the Longhorns, obviously, at the top at 6-1. You've got three teams currently at 5-2 in Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Kansas State, Iowa State is about to join that group. So you've got four teams that are still alive to claim that second spot in Arlington, right next to the Texas Longhorns. Big 12 in November. It is not for the faint of heart. And
Put it on a t-shirt. We love that. Yeah, put it on a t-shirt, man. Like, let's make that in our merch store here. But
we might need to.
Oklahoma State, I think, is still going to be in the catbird seat here because they have wins over K-State and Oklahoma. So that's going to help in tiebreaker scenario. Iowa State obviously beat Oklahoma State, but in a four-way tie, it's going to go down to who beat who and, you know, maybe a rock, paper, scissors, best out of seven to settle the last spot here on the last weekend. But
yeah,
Oklahoma State still right in front of them. Right, Houston and Cincinnati. BYU. Houston and BYU to end the season. So it's still right there for them to take it. And yet,
that
45-3 is hard to ignore in Orlando.
Scoring 3 points against a hapless UCF defense. That's impressive. Anyway, we won't drub the pokes too much. You tripped up, put it behind you, go secure your spot in Arlington. Other conference championship games that are either on the line or are set. Tulane hangs on. They all but guarantee they will play for an American title with their win over Tulsa today, 24-22. They had to hang on, but Tulane has won their last 12 games when Michael Pratt starts at quarterback. That feels pretty good for the Green Wave as they're rolling towards the postseason and maybe another New Year's Six berth.
Yeah, and it will be interesting because there's still three undefeated teams in the American, and Tulane plays UTSA on the last week of the season. So
SMU plays Memphis.
Yeah, UTSA plays Memphis. SMU plays Memphis as well, I think. And, if UTSA can knock off Tulane and SMU wins out, then obviously Tulane would be knocked out. But yeah, they're sitting in a really good chance here.
Yeah. I think Tulane, UTSA got off to a little bit of a slow start against Rice. That is a de facto semifinal game.
Yeah.
Tulane and UTSA in the conference championship.
In New Orleans too, I believe.
Yeah. I feel like we could get a little bit of chaos. Like SMU going on the road to Memphis, that's not a lock for the Ponies to win. They struggled a little bit with UNT on a Friday night and eventually put them away. But I think folks are counting Memphis out a little early. So I'm pretty confident Tulane makes it to the title game once again. Conference USA championship game is set. New Mexico State upsets Western Kentucky on the road. They will go to the conference championship game, and Liberty is now 10-0. They cruise to a win over Old Dominion. They are set to take on the Aggies of New Mexico State. I don't know. In the transfer portal pick 'em, did you pick Western Kentucky or New Mexico State?
I picked Diego Pavia, baby. I'm riding with my boy.
I did too. I didn't necessarily pick Pavia, but I did just have a feeling Western Kentucky's just not been that impressive this year.
They haven't. No, and there's no reason for it too, but they have struggled mightily this year against bad teams in CUSA.
Yeah. Jerry Kill, man, tip of the cap to him. He has rebuilt a New Mexico State program that was the laughing stock of college football. I mean, Trey, on our NCAA files, we're subbing them out for a fan created Coastal Carolina or an Appalachian State. Like, get New Mexico State out of the game. Let me play with a Sunbelt team. Jerry Kill took that personally.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's going to need another tattoo soon as well.
It's true. true. It's very, very true. Elsewhere around the rest of the top 25, and you just hit me with, you know, a note here or there. Ohio State crushes Michigan State. Louisville, we talked about, survives Virginia. Oregon State bludgeons Stanford 62-17. They scored touchdowns on 9 of their 12 drives in that ball game. That's a tough look for the Cardinal. Kansas lost to Texas Tech. How about the Red Raiders defense getting to 5-5?
Yeah, 5-5, sitting there at 4-3 in the Big 12, so not mathematically eliminated from the title game either. I'm just saying that prediction is not – it's on life support, but it's not dead. they host UCF and then travel to Texas in the ultimate ultimate scenario to steal one from the Longhorns right there. So
yeah.
I'm just saying, if they can get to, you know, get to 6-3 in the conference and a couple things fall their way, I might have to go back on letting that die too early.
You got to feed Taj Brooks, man. 33 carries, 133 yards. It was the Taj Brooks show today. Got a comment from a listener asking if we were going to be at the Big 12 championship game. And honestly, I hadn't thought of it. We might need to find our way over to Arlington. We
might need to get some credentials there. See if we can get a badge for that game.
Yeah, let me call Jared. See if he'll let us in the building. I have been in the press box up there. It's a nice place. Maybe I could pull some strings. Get Champion Sports Radio credentials in a week early. Oklahoma destroys West Virginia. Arizona walks off Colorado 34-31 on Senior Day for the Buffs. Trey, I tweeted this. We were called haters at the beginning of the year for saying that 5-7 was the ceiling for Colorado, and I guess technically 6-6 still is the ceiling. But Deion's got to win both games. He's on the road at Wazoo. He's on the road. Is it at Utah to finish out the regular season?
Utah in the manufactured rivalry game.
Yeah, just to make a bowl game. So listen, the haters have been awfully quiet these last several weeks.
They've moved on to another flash in the pan story. So, yeah, I mean, Colorado, Deion's building something at Colorado.
He is. Yeah. And that's been our point long the whole term, year.
Long term, he's going to be fine. And he's going to be a power in the Big 12. Like, absolutely.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Long term, he's going to be fine. But we knew he was going to take his lumps this year.
We just said be patient. Honestly, the next story that folks might be moving on to, Arizona and their quest to have more wins than USC, that rides, baby. USC is getting drubbed by Oregon right now.
We are looking live at Oregon about to receive the second half kickoff up 22-14. It feels like it could be a lot worse than 22-14 with the missed opportunities Oregon's had. So I still think Oregon's going to go foot on the throat here in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, USC losing out is a real possibility, and Arizona still has Arizona State on schedule. So I want to live in that world. I want to live in that world where the Wildcats have more wins than the Trojans.
I do too. Talk to your kids about a 7-5 USC. That might be a real deal.
8-4 Jed Fish, Arizona.
Oh my gosh. What simulation are we living in? Number 22, Iowa. I'm flexing the hoodie. Baseball. Iowa baseball hoodie. They got sent to me for my birthday. Shout out to future in-laws for that. They shut out Rutgers 22-0. We cash the under. If you continue to bet the farm on Iowa unders, you are a very, very rich man or woman right now because it's automatic. Now, we did not expect Rutgers to not score points. In fact, I picked Rutgers to win this game. But the Iowa defense, man, is just legit. I was trying to explain it once again to my fiance. It's the offense is historically bad, but it doesn't matter because the defense is historically good.
Yeah, and just fun note, in the last 30 years, the 5 lowest over-unders are all Iowa games. All 32.5 or lower, they've all hit the under.
Jeez.
So if you see a historic note attached to an Iowa football game, bet the under. That's what we've learned so far.
That is amazing. They gave it a run for their money. Iowa kind of had a little bit of an offensive explosion there in the second half.
I was sweating it a little bit for sure.
Yeah, they were feeling their oats a little bit and put up 22. North Carolina, we said that live. They hang on to beat Duke in I forgot what the name of that rivalry is. Battle of Tobacco Road, is that what it's called? Something like that. UNC hangs on. Duke gave them everything they could, and we went to overtime. And if you know anything about North Carolina football, overtime is a scary place for the Tar Heels, but they do hang on to beat Duke. Riley Leonard did not play in that game, for what it's worth. Kansas State crushes Baylor 59-25. Anything else from the top 25 or anything from the group of five?
You know, Coastal beat Texas State today. I know a lot of people were thinking that Texas State had a chance to steal that one, but Coastal held firm.
Yours truly did that.
Yeah, elsewhere, in our late night games, we've got Boise all over New Mexico, Iowa State all over BYU. So, Air Force struggling again out on the island. So Hawaii's up 13-10 over Air Force right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Little bit of a hangover from the Commander-in-Chief's trophy there for the Falcons. Sam Houston getting their first FBS win today all over Louisiana Tech, 42-27.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that said they're on a winning streak now. They've won two in a row. Yeah, really tough look for Sonny Cumbie and the Bulldogs down there in Ruston.
Northwestern might make a bowl. That's interesting.
They
destroyed Wisconsin today. Again, a Wisconsin team that doesn't have a quarterback, but 24-10. They have Purdue and Illinois left. 3-7 Purdue, who put up 49 points out of nowhere today.
Gosh dang it. I mean, the under was dead by halftime.
What you gotta pick and choose. You gotta pick and choose. I don't like betting unders involving Purdue because they seem to be just spark out of nowhere, but usually in the Big Ten West, it's a good
Not
bet.
This year.
I'm
the
just
Jeff
saying.
Brom Purdue, the Jeff Brom Spoilermakers, yes. I would never bet an under at home. But what on earth happened today? I don't know. That was disgusting.
One other team on Bowl Watch that I want to highlight is the Colorado State Rams. 4-6. Their remaining two games are hosting 2-8 Nevada and on the road at 3-7 Hawaii. So Bowl Watch in Fort Collins for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah, they took it to San Diego State. We got a bunch of never go full Brady Hoke tweets coming out of that. Over in the Sun Belt, shout out to South Alabama. They get back to 500. They've got a shot at going bowling. They beat Arkansas State 21-14. You mentioned Coastal over Texas State. Appalachian State got a massive win over Georgia State, 42-14. And then Marshall, on the day that they honor the 75 in Huntington, they win 38-33. It really wasn't even that close. Georgia Southern scored a last-second touchdown to draw within five. But the Sun Belt, man, it's staying spicy. You know, we're waiting on news if James Madison is going to be allowed to play in that conference championship game. I don't think they will be.
But there's no reason. Like, everyone assumed it was an NCAA rule, but it's just like, you know, the Sun Belt kind of being petty at this point. There's no rule that says they can't.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is the Sun Belt technically applying that rule. The thought is if the NCAA caved on their ruling, then the Sun Belt would have to cave on their own ruling, preventing the Dukes from playing in the conference championship game. But right now, you have Coastal Carolina at the top of the East, 5-2 on that side. Troy, who dominated Louisiana Monroe today, is at the top of the West. It's a logjam behind Troy. I think did Troy lock up the Sun Belt West today? Maybe they need one more win statistically to make it official.
We'll get Dan Keegan on the phone. He can let us know.
Yeah, I'm pulling up. They beat Texas State. I think Troy must have locked up the West because they play Louisiana and Southern Miss left. But Southern Miss just got their second win in the Sun Belt this year, and it was actually over Louisiana. Frank Gore Jr. ran all over the Raging Cajuns once again. So anyway, live math, live radio. I believe right now, if the season ended today, it would be Coastal Carolina and Troy. Coastal obviously holds tiebreaker over Appalachian State, and Georgia Southern losing today was massive because it puts them at 3-3 in the conference. Anyway, I love this time of the year. We love the Fun Belt. A lot of G5 results still to keep your eye on coming down the stretch. Anything else to get to before we sign off?
That's about all I got, man. It was a loaded slate. Next week is the annual SEC bye week, so we will still be here, but one less conference to cover fully next week as they all take a week off to beat up on the little sisters of the poor. But a lot of big matchups around the country next week as well.
Very, very true. Very true. We'll have to see if I'm on the live show next week. I may be sitting in a tree this time next Saturday.
It's a good week to go. Rest up for Thanksgiving. Rest up for the 3 or 4 days in a row of nonstop rivalry games. Get in a tree while you can.
Best time of the year, man. I love it. All right. Well, that'll do it here for us at the Three Technique. For Trey Reeves, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for chilling with us, hanging out with us tonight. If you are on the podcast side, we'd love to have you live with us on Saturday nights. Again, around 10:30 is when we go live. If you've been hanging out with us tonight, appreciate it so much. And until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious, yep. How about that?